newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
From Studio D in the Alan S. Chartok Broadcast Center on Albany's Central Avenue. Here we are. Does that sound good?
I think we need some music, too.
Yeah, yeah. We had it. We already heard beat. It's the Media Project, a half hour of commentary and analysis and maybe a little bit of frivolity about the media. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now writing on Substack, the Upstate American. You know, when I first started doing it, people didn't really know what Substack was. Now there's a lot of folks who do it. Anyway, welcome to the Media Project. I'd like to introduce my colleagues, Judy Patrick and Miles Reed and Barbara Lombardo. Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, but today could we talk a little bit about this AI-generated book list that was disseminated by a syndicate, but and also more broadly about the quality of content we put in our newspapers or on our websites and what it means in terms of our credibility?
Ah, what a great topic. Okay, that's a pretty broad thing, the quality. We will do that. Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy. What's up?
Hello. I want to talk about that also, but I'm hoping we'll have time this week to talk about the threat on campuses where they are telling journalists that you may not be covering us. And those are student journalists.
Yeah. I just was on the Columbia University campus, and there was some talk about that. That's a really great topic. And Miles Reed, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady and affiliated publications. What's on your mind today?
Today, I want to talk about something that over the last week that I've had an increasing concern about, this criticism of the media about our coverage of President Joe Biden, former President Biden. Obviously, it's been going on for months, but then with Jake Tapper's book, it really has peaked. And I'm in a position now where last week, I think on this show, I said we missed it in the media, but now I'm thinking we're just the scapegoat, actually.
Well, I think you have a good point, and I agree with you. I think that's something great to talk about because the book Original Sin by CNN's Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson of Axios, the subtitle has the word cover-up, and that shows you what they think about it. But I've got to say, if there really was a cover-up involving the most covered person in the world, 900 reporters are credentialed to cover the White House full-time. If all those journalists really were hoodwinked by a cover-up, or if they were in on some deal and trying to cover it up, then there's something very wrong with the way we cover the presidency and the president. But what the book focuses on, this is interesting, is Biden's inner circle suggests that what's often called groupthink kept the truth of his deterioration out of the public eye. And it doesn't say much about press coverage, but the commentary since then has been. And so here's my question for the group, and I think we'll probably get into this in any case, but what I want to know is what you think happened in terms of media coverage, and I'll offer my top line. I think we Americans aren't comfortable talking about aging in general. You know, when we say that someone is showing their age, it sounds like shaming. And even beyond aging, when we discuss either physical frailty or mental decline, it seems intrusive. And one of the ethical tenets of journalism, after all, is to minimize harm. So you say, well, do people who go into public life not benefit from that standard? And can we go ahead and harm them by publishing what amounts to speculation about their physical and mental condition? And there's been some talk about that because of the recent coverage of Senator John Fetterman, his depression and the lingering effects of his stroke 2 years ago has gotten a lot of pushback. So figuring out the balance between our truth-telling responsibility and sensitivity is one of the constants for journalism decision makers. And what I'm wondering is whether those decisions were wrong during the Biden presidency, or whether, as you say, Miles, are journalists being made scapegoats here? What were you aiming toward?
Yeah, you know, I think we could have done better in the media, but I started thinking about it, and I went back and looked at some of our coverage over the last 4.5 years of President Biden, and we didn't just totally bear it. We ran various op-eds over the years. We had stories where politicians, especially Republicans, raised issues. I don't think the Democratic Party was forthcoming about it. I think that the real scrutiny needs to be more on the Democratic Party. But when you look at our stories, we had a number of stories over the years, and I did a search on this, where we quoted President Trump, at the time former President Trump, where he referred to him as Sleepy Joe. And that was a regular drumbeat there. And, you know, I started thinking about it. And to me, was I the only one that thought that that was sort of a coded, sanitized criticism that he felt he was starting to decline mentally? And so it is a tough one to get into this. But I think I want to use this moment to look at it with both political parties in America to say, if we got it so wrong, let's come up with an agreed upon litmus test that we have for top elected officials for mental tests for mental acuity. And then those need to be disclosed just the way campaign finances are, because I think we're missing the boat, and it's too convenient just to blame the media.
I still blame the media for a lot of this. The dozens of people who are reporting the media and their editors and their outlets and their media company owners, I think, have a responsibility to make the tough decisions and report what perhaps made them too uncomfortable when you're looking at the bashing the candidate who is at least sane versus the other candidate who is day in and day out incompetent and a threat to democracy. Do you want to come down and bash the guy that you think would be better for democracy? I think some of that is part of it. And it also was easy to shrug off as the criticism of Biden's age as a factor when most of the comments were coming from or were attributed to GOP people, that you weren't getting on the record comments from Democrats. So then you could shrug it off saying, oh, the Republicans are just criticizing him for political reasons. So that was difficult. But we in the media should have been more on top of this.
So Judy, do you share Barbara's feeling about that?
I think we're all being, the media industry is being a little defensive at this point. When we hear any discussion of Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson's book, you hear, you know, well, you know, there was the Wall Street Journal expose, remember that? And that the New York Times did do some stories, and we did raise questions about the fact that he wasn't doing the interviews. But I was thinking back to the 2020 election where it was during COVID, so he spent a lot of time, as President Trump at the time said, in his basement, campaigning from his basement. And when you read the book, you understand that was to his advantage because he was not, at that point, a very good campaigner. He was not talking well. So in any of these discussions, I think there's a lot of criticism that should be leveled against the Democratic Party. And then at the end, they'll say, oh, and by the way, maybe we didn't do such a good job. Well, our job at this point is to really think about, should we have pressed it further? And I think it translates into the current president and the issues that need to be raised about, you know, what he says and hold him to greater account. You know, there's a whole issue of privacy. I mean, we respected the privacy of FDR. We respected the privacy of JFK when they were both president, and we didn't talk about those issues. Maybe when you run for president, you give up all privacy. I mean, I want to see all the test results, and we don't get those, especially from the current president. So one of the things as an editor I tried not to be is defensive. And so I'm trying to think, what did we really get wrong?
What I object to in the current analysis is actually Jake Tapper, in being pressed in some interviews, he's such as by Megyn Kelly, for example, who has become, by the way, an apologist for the far right. But in an interview with Megyn Kelly, Jake Tapper said, you know, the right wing media had it right because they were critical of Biden. And I want to make a point that there is a difference there between factual reporting, which is what we now see in the Jake Tapper book, and what was going on Fox News when there were these attacks on Biden that were wholly unsubstantiated, that were basically saying from the very beginning he was completely unaware of what he was doing, didn't know where he was. So I think that there's a matter of degree here, and that is where journalism really needs to be strong, in the nuance. It is very rare that we have good guys and bad guys, white and black. I've often said to people that great journalism is done in the shades of gray where we lead our lives. And this is actually one of those stories where the shades of gray were lost, where perhaps there was, Judy, you say defensiveness. Maybe there was defensiveness on the part of reporters saying, well, we're not going to give in to this right-wing clatter about Biden. But we didn't. I should say the mainstream media perhaps didn't, therefore, look as hard as they could have at what was going on there.
I appreciate Miles' comment about, well, is there some measure that we could use in our reporting so that we're balanced? That's a difficult test to set up and to abide by. I don't think it would suffice to have that kind of a thing. There's just too much gray involved in that and too much subtlety. And how about the Hur report when they said, oh, we're not going to pursue criminal charges or whatever against Biden because he's just a kind old man who with a bad memory and a jury wouldn't convict him. So that just felt so gratuitously political to me at the time. And I'm not sure it was anything more than that. Are you thinking differently about that now?
It could have been just a reasonable assessment by a professional prosecutor saying, you know, the jury wouldn't buy it. But there was a defensiveness. And I, too, thought that it was partisan. But it sounds now, in retrospect, as though it was just simply accurate work by a prosecutor.
Or it was both.
Right. Or, I mean, if you listen to the audio tape that was released by the Trump administration just last week, clearly, if you listen to the audio tape, you're thinking, this is the person who's in charge of the free world. This is the person we're expecting to be awakened at 2 o'clock in the middle of the night and make decisions about major geopolitical events. I mean, when you listen to the tape, the Biden administration did not release the tape. And there was a very good reason why they didn't. It's clearly rambling. He clearly is a nice old guy with a bad memory.
Yeah, you know, one thing, I think it's an interesting dilemma that we have, but I sometimes hear from people, especially right-wing readers, say you totally ignored Biden's mental decline. And, you know, I haven't done a full audit about what we did. But one perfect example is right after that debate that was disastrous, everybody that saw that, we had a front page story when Antonio Delgado, the lieutenant governor of New York State, said it's time for him to step aside. He's got some problems. We ran that on the front page of the Gazette and I think all of our smaller papers, too. And that's just one example. I think my point is there were opportunities we in the media took to try to at least report it, because there is this ethical dilemma that in general, we don't want to make the news. We want to report what various stakeholders are saying. And in this case, a Democrat, we reported, called him out and said this. But there was not a lot of furor. It took a little bit longer before the rest of the country came along. And in fact, he was criticized within his own party. Again, the media, we did our part to report that, and it sort of stopped where they attacked the messenger in a way.
What do you do as a reporter when you're on the beat? And I'm thinking of these White House reporters on the beat. What do you do when there is manipulation, when you can't get access to some of the principals? This is as true and probably less true, I guess, in city halls and in the state capital, because you tend to have an opportunity to get up a little bit closer to the people. But your message is constantly managed in one way by the fact that there are issues that are constantly being shoved at the beat reporters from the media office that you need to report on. So how do you get at these questions when you might even have a suspicion that there are stories that need to be told? Here's an example that is real life, and I don't know whether this has applicability. Andrew Cuomo's tendency to make passes, I guess is the word, to young women. I wonder about the Capitol Press Corps. Did the Capitol Press Corps miss that? Or is that something that we ought to be looking at? Would an author taking a look at that now, in the same way that Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson have taken a look at Joe Biden, would an author taking a look at the Capitol Press Corps handling of Andrew Cuomo have a better answer to that now than what went on during that time frame?
I think they would. I mean, I think that in hindsight, we looked at that and a lot of us were pushed off because Andrew Cuomo was very strong-willed. He was bullying. We talked about it on this show. He aggressively went after some of the very best reporters in the Capitol. So I think I'm saying, yes, we missed the boat on that until it was too late. But I think once things started to sort of come to fruition, I think the media did a credible job trying to report all those allegations. The fact that he's now what appears to be a front runner in New York City, it's not for lack of some pretty intensive scrutiny since then. It's that this is a political creature and he's moving forward.
You know, reporters get stonewalled. That happens all the time. In Biden's case, I think there was aggregate data. There was the fact that, you know, you could look at his logs of his daily activity and find out he was going to the residence at 4 o'clock every day, or the fact that he was doing shorter and shorter interviews or no interviews at all. It's hard to write about the absence of things happening. And there was some of that, but there wasn't enough meat on that bone to really develop it. Again, the Wall Street Journal report that happened earlier on in 2024 was good, but there was a lot of blowback against those reporters for doing that story. And also at the time, they were risking access. I mean, once you write that story, the White House isn't going to be returning your calls very quickly.
Yeah, remember with Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, I mean, now in hindsight, we look at that, and I think most people who are paying attention think that even when he was reelected in 84, he was already in sharp decline. But it is a tough thing. So, again, the media tries to do this. And the reason I bring that one up is there was reporting about his decline. And, in fact, if I recall correctly, Saturday Night Live had that skit early in the second term where he's at the button with the nuclear bomb and he says, "Mammy, I'm going to give it a press," right? So very early on in
that's
that,
good.
Again, I think it's too quick for people to say, "Oh, the media missed that." And what I say, again, I'm a little defensive and Judy calls me out, and I am like that. But I think that just because you maybe didn't read that story in the New York Times, the Times Union, the Gazette, just because you didn't listen to a talk show and hear the discussion of it doesn't always mean that it did not get reported on.
The media is not always to blame for people not knowing about something. People don't hear what they might have heard.
I think the media also deserve credit as an institution or as an industry. We do a lot of soul searching and hand-wringing about, did we do something wrong? Could we have done something better? How could we be more responsible in the future? And yet I'm not sure that we learn our lesson from one year and instance to another. And I detest whataboutism. So I'm going to apologize in advance for the whataboutism I'm about to say is, you know, we're so worried about, did we do enough to expose Joe Biden? And like, how many weeks or months or minutes from now should we be talking about, have we done enough to expose the lies that Donald Trump is telling day in and day out and his incompetence?
One of the terrifying stories recently is in the New York Times last week when it talked about how much is actually out there in the media about the craziness coming out of the White House these days and how people are simply not paying attention.
The lies with South Africa and the...
Right.
It's unbelievable. And it is being covered.
It is being covered. Yeah, that's true. But people who don't necessarily read or pay attention to the news every day. You know, we are all high news consumers. We really take in everything. And sometimes you think, well, why don't people see this? Why don't people pay attention?
I still think there's more Biden reporting to be done. I mean, we need to talk to that tight circle that was around him to find out what decisions were really affected by his mental state. I mean, as a political measure, I hear the Republicans already coming after him saying maybe we need to nullify or negate some of the actions he took because maybe he actually wasn't making these decisions.
A lot of the media, I think, did a great job going back to Donald Trump's first term, did an excellent job reporting about some of his issues, problems. I mean, a lot of TV journalists and a lot of print journalists did stories with many former cabinet members who spoke publicly. We documented it. They lodged warnings that this guy is a danger to the Constitution, danger to the country. Repeatedly, we've seen a lot of those stories. His former lawyer, Michael Cohen, he talked to the media, and you could say he might have been biased. He was trying to get out. But again, then Donald Trump got reelected or elected to a second term. My point is, I think the media tried to acquit itself pretty well, did tons of coverage about Trump's antics in the first term, and here we are again. So,
Well, these are interesting issues that we will probably be grappling with every year because candidates change, but the circumstances are the same.
Can I ask one
always
related
trying
question?
To unbury things.
I'm
yes.
Sorry. Just one related question on Jake Tapper. I just feel sleazy about his continued discussion about this. Feels like an advertisement for his book and self-serving. And partly I probably hold him a little culpable for the problem that he is exposing and was wondering how you, my colleagues in the Media Project, feel about him advertising his book day after day.
Well, if you publish a book, you kind of got to get out there to plug it,
show.
I guess, right?
It's on his show.
I've heard people refer to CNN in recent days. It's an infomercial for the Jake Tapper book. I mean, it's true. The first, I was interested, but after 10 days of like full-on coverage, there are other stories to cover. The fact that, you know, Biden had the cancer diagnosis elevated the Jake Tapper story in terms of public importance. So Yeah, it's like a big infomercial.
The problem is that when you look back at the term of a previous president, you're ignoring what's really newsworthy right now. There's only a certain amount of time in the person's consciousness. And the stories that we really need to be looking at are forward-looking. What's going on with this big, beautiful bill?
Stop calling it that.
What's going on with it? And so every time that you put some of these stories out there, it of course plays into the hand of those who would rather have you not pay attention to the details of that legislation.
I think we in the media are trying to compete with all the influencers out there for attention. Perfect example, at least in our coverage area, is that we've done some really deep reporting about this chronic bridge problem in Glenville in Schenectady County that keeps getting hit. We've done stories, we've talked to DOT engineers saying, here's why you can or you can't lower the road. We've talked to the railroad people saying it would cost us $8 million to regrade this thing and it would be cost prohibitive. We've done a lot of coverage, and some of the stories have done very well. All it takes is an influencer. There's a local influencer on Instagram and TikTok. They come along and invest a grand total of an hour to do a video of a truck turning around at the bridge. Their engagement is way off the chart compared to anything we've ever gotten. So I only say that this promotion to try to get attention is something that I think we're all grappling with. How much do you do?
I think we need a mental capacity test for drivers if they don't know that is not a place to be. You know, pay attention to the signs, ladies and gentlemen. All right. We appreciate hearing from our listeners. media@waamc.org is how you can be a part of this conversation. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Rex Smith here with Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, and Miles Reed on the Media Project. All right. A quick reference to 15 books on a list, a summer reading list published by the Chicago Sun-Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and a number of other newspapers. Only 5 of the 15 books were real. Why is that? Because the list was compiled using artificial intelligence. Okay, so who's to blame for this? Judy, you said you wanted to talk about
it. So this appears to be something that was disseminated by a syndicate, and newspapers or media companies pay syndicates for content. They publish it. They usually sell advertising around it. Oftentimes, these are gardening supplements. This one was a summer supplement, and among the content they got from the syndicate, St. King Syndicate, was this list. A freelancer did it. The freelancer used artificial intelligence to generate the list. This list was bad. What responsibility does a local newspaper pay? Are they supposed to read all this stuff? Usually, the content in these supplements is kind of generic, but you are relying on the syndicate to produce quality content, stuff that's original, that is new to the reader. And when you publish this without a thought about what might be within, you are hurting your credibility. And the reader does not know that this came from a syndicate, that you didn't really go through it line by line. And at a time when trust in the media is at all-time low, the last thing on earth we need to do is publishing bad information. I mean, we need to, as an industry, pay closer attention to the quality of our content and to realize that it costs money. I mean, to pay people to create a solid list, something that people can trust. I mean, how hard could it have been? There are a lot of people who love books that I'm sure would gladly have created this list, including Joe Donahue, who at WAMC, who offered to do it for free this morning.
Absolutely, absolutely. Who's to blame? You would probably publish something. If it comes from a syndicate, you'd trust it, wouldn't you, Miles?
We have. Occasionally, we do. We have special sections, especially ones that are more branded
content.
When to
plant your daffodils.
We do those. We have one with a whole bunch of recipes. I've actually never, gone through to say, are these even real? And I think it is a huge red flag. And my biggest concern is that I hope the public, the reading public, realizes that more and more papers are eager to just scoop up anything they can find to fill their pages. And it raises this concern because there are plenty of newspapers, even in New York State, Judy, people that I know that, you've sometimes worked with in your former job with the New York Press Association. There are a lot of papers now. Almost all of their local content is just a press release that they're taking those things and they're copying them, pasting them in, and they run them as a story. And I'm not trying to bash other media outlets, but I think the public probably has no idea, particularly in some of these smaller papers, that column by a congressperson or whatever it is not journalism. It's not objective journalism, and it's happening more and more frequently. Again, there's this constant crunch to try to do it. And we all know that there are some online aggregator sites. It's entirely generated by AI. They just scoop up stuff that the local media does. there's no editing and they just regurgitate it. And then I look at those ones and see the engagement is off the charts. So this is a huge dilemma.
You're right. This is a huge concern. It's much bigger than this, you know, silly list of books. The person who wrote this for the syndicate came out and said, you know, my bad, I'm horrible. I did use AI. I didn't realize that that person providing information didn't check that these were real books. And why would you, in a normal world, you're looking up stuff? And we would not expect any of the newspaper editors to have to go through any of that content to say, I wonder if these books are real, or the gardening tips are real, or the recipes are real. We need to be able to expect that things that we're getting are real. Part of it is the media having certain guidelines about what you will and won't accept in terms of AI, making sure that that's clear to the syndicates that they might be providing, and making sure that it's clear to their own staffs. I'm concerned about any content becomes suspect.
Yep. In terms of who's to blame, I'd have to blame the syndicate. And I'm sorry, it's King Features. I love the people at King Features. They're a division of Hearst. I was the editor of a Hearst newspaper. But you trust the syndicate to give you information that you can use if you're an editor. And that was not checked. And I would say that writer ought not to be working for King Features or anybody else in the near term.
And they need an AI policy.
Yeah, an AI policy. Definitely. You're absolutely right about that. You know, we didn't get around to the conversation about campus press. We'll get to it next time.
It will be an issue still.
It will. Yes. Thank you. We're out of time. This is, you know, one of these conversations that could just keep going on, and we hope that you folks will join us for more conversation in weeks to come. Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, and Miles Reed are here, and I'm Rex Smith, with thanks to our producer, Dave Gustina, and to you folks for joining us this week. Hope you're back next week again for The Media Project.
Hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people when they know they've got a people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and editor and Vice President of the Daily Gazette, Miles Reed. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
To working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.